So welcome to the third engagement and learning telelearning session on enterprise development, sponsored by the Canadian Social Economy Hub and the Steering Committee for the 2010 National Summit on People-Centered Economy. So like I said a bit earlier, and a few people join us, to make sure we don't hear any background noise, we invite you to do star 6 to mute your line. And later on, when we'll have a question period, I will ask you to undo. So do star 6, I think, again, to unmute to be able to ask your question. My name is Etel Côté. I'm involved in enterprise development for the last 30 years. I've been involved and still involved with SEDNET and the Social Enterprise Council of Canada and a few organizations who are part of organizing that national summit. And now I'm working at the Canadian Centre for Community Renewal in Enterprise Development. So I'm very pleased to facilitate this session, and it will be my pleasure to have those speakers talk to all of us, but also facilitate the question period. And please, everyone who's joining, do star 6 to mute your line right when you get on board. Thank you. The CSE Hub is a national social economy research program that is co-led by the University of Victoria, but also Canadian CED Network. That involves practitioner organizations, universities across Canada with a national hub and 6 regional centers in different parts of the country. And it's been funded by the federal government, Social Science and the Humanities Research Council, research, and the research is being undertaken to understand how to approach, how the approaches on the social economy can be better understood and effectively applied so that community organizations, civil society, community developers, and researchers can collaborate to empower groups and communities to meet their social and economic needs. This session about enterprise development, we are very pleased. We will have 3 speakers, Nancy Nintam, John Anderson, and Anna Maria Peredo. And the session is based on 2 papers. One is National Summit Issue Paper, Enterprise Development, done by Nancy Nintam, Chantier de l'Économie Sociale, and John Anderson from the Canadian Co-op Association. And the CSE of Knowledge Mobilization Paper by Anna Maria Peredo and Noel Kyo about social enterprise and social innovation. We have the paper, each issue paper, on the 6th team, but on this specific team too. It's on the wiki. It's been put in place, so it's been accessible in French and in English. And on the wiki, you can contribute with your comments, either during this conference call, the telelearning conference call, or after, between now and the conference. We do have a chat room online. And to also help every participant to interact amongst each of you when you are online, you can contribute on that chat room. And Rachel, if you're online, can you give the link?
Yep, the link is www.chatsy.com/CSEHUB. So that's chatsy.com/CSEHUB.
Thank you very much. And thank you, Rachel, also for organizing the whole session. So for sure, for the new people who join in, do star 6 to mute your line. We won't hear any background. And go on the chat line when you want to raise also some direct question and comments. But we'll have a question period at the end of the session. And if you're not on the computer, you can ask questions, like I said, to the speakers directly during this session. We will end the session at 1 o'clock, and I'll go right away to present the speakers in the order they will speak. First of all, we'll have Anna Maria Peredo, who will speak about one of the paper I just named a few seconds ago. She is Associate Professor of Entrepreneurship, Sustainability, and International Business in the Faculty of Business of University of Victoria, and director of the Center for Co-op and Community-Based Economy. Her research explored the role of business in fostering sustainable communities, especially among poor and disadvantaged people. She has published an impressive number of articles in leading academic journals, as well as chapters in important research anthologies on community-based enterprise, cooperative, indigenous entrepreneurship, and social entrepreneurship. Anna will speak to us during 10 minutes on her paper. And right after that, we'll go directly to John Anderson, who for 9 minutes is the Director of Government Affairs and Public Policy at the Canadian Cooperative Association. He was formerly Vice President of Strategic Partnership and Alliance, and before that he conducted research with the Canadian Social Canadian Council for Social Development. He developed the Community Social Data Strategy with Statistics Canada, which involved 15 community partnerships across Canada. During this discussion, he will discuss their paper that talk about the role government could play in providing a framework for scaling the social enterprise sector in Canada. And John will be accompanied by Nancy Nimtam, and she will also continue to talk for another 7 minutes. She's the President Executive Director of the Chantier de l'Économie Sociale, a nonprofit organization administered by 28 representatives of various networks of social enterprise who are co-ops or nonprofits, local development organizations, and social movements. The mission of the Chantier de l'Économie Sociale, a Quebec-wide organization that emerged from Quebec Summit on Economy and Employment in 1996, is the promotion and development of collective entrepreneurship. Nancy has also been co-director of ARUC, Community University Research Alliance on the Social Economy, since 1999. So right on the spot, and I took less time, so it will give us more time at the end for question period, I will invite Anna Maria to talk to us. Anna Maria?
Good morning. Since I'm the first speaker, I would like to bring up some macro critical issues in understanding our economic life and enterprise development. Then I know that there are people here interested in social enterprise. I will touch a little bit on that, and I suspect that that would be the big bulk of questions. But so we will do that. I will talk about a little bit about those macro issues. So there is something like a consensus, I think, that entrepreneurship is a crucial element, some even suggest a necessary element in economic development. Can you hear well?
Yes.
Okay, great. But I think that there is some issues, macro issues, that we should look at in order to fulfill this promise of entrepreneurship as a vehicle, as a form, as a tool for economic development. So here is where I have a major concerns, and we outline it in the paper. I think that we need to be aware that many of the underlying theories and practices in entrepreneurship and economic development, I think they are underlying the idea of the supremacy of the global neoliberalism and the objective for economic growth. I know there is a lot of discussion about economic growth, but it's something like we just cannot get over that. And also, one of the main problems that I see with the fit here is the denial of diversity of economic ways of organizing our economic life. I think that's a huge challenge that we are facing, and I hope we can continue talking about this. And I think that this denial of this diversity of economic ways of organizing our economic life have created a negative consequence for poor indigenous people everywhere, and it's creating an enormous pressure on the new concept or new label of social entrepreneurship. So here it is. I think one of the biggest challenges that we face, especially in business, is this need for embedding business within community and environment. I think we are not there, and I think the economic models and entrepreneurship models, including social entrepreneurship, is having a little bit of trouble on that. So I think that there is a huge, I talk a lot about, and I have done research, a lot of research on economic diversity, and I think that there are some lessons to learn from anthropology and history. And in that sense, I would like to call attention to two very important people that give us a different ways to see economic life. And my hope is that in the future we can connect better our economic and entrepreneurship models within this kind of thinking. So I'm looking at basically at the work of Carl Polanyi and Robert Herbrunner. And they basically what they do is they remind us the market has always been with us, but not a market system. And there has been a diversity of arrangements that have existed before, you know, this economic system that we seem that sometimes we think that exists forever, but actually it's a very recent historical event. And there is a whole diversity of arrangements. Economic, one of the biggest arguments that they made is that economic and other exchange have been traditionally being embedded. So what I'm meaning by embedded is that economic life is guided by social ideals and goals. And now what we are seeing is a reverse of that. What we are seeing is that we are leaving all to the market to determine everything. So the market has become a very, very big part of our life and determine what our goals and ideals are. And so I think that also one of the points that they bring is that the
market system... Oh, hi, Mandy. How are you?
Excuse me. Anyone on the line, excuse me, Ana Maria, please do star 6 to mute your line to let Ana Maria continue speaking. Okay, Ana Maria, okay. You can continue.
Thank you. So, as I was saying, the market system are historically new, and I think, as we understand, and this market system require the commodification of the physical environment, the land, the work, labor, and money, capital. So, and the other aspect that they remind us, this Carl Polanyi and Hal Brunner, is that standard economic analysis just doesn't apply everywhere. And there is the idea of economic, homo economicus, that is so prevalent in many of these models. So my sense is that from the social economy perspective and from the community perspective, we need to challenge these assumptions of current business models. I don't think it's business as usual, and I think that we have some economies like Daly that have pointed out these contradictions. For example, the contradictions between economic growth and environment and sustainability and the idea of sustainable growth. We also have a number of people now working in the idea of increasing well-being. Working in the idea that the increased material well-being increases well-being. And I think there's a lot of work by Offner and John Halliwell about saying, well, you know, there is a level that economic development creates well-being, but at a certain point, it doesn't work. Okay? And I think that there is a whole assumption, given my work in poor populations, that we assume a lot about what kind of material well-being the poor and the disadvantaged are interested in. And I think we get sometimes some surprises. So I think that based on social practices, the solidarity economy has the potential to bring new models. But there is something that is still that we are stuck in this idea of the TINA, there is no alternative. Even if we said in the sector there is no alternative, it still seems that we are what I call, we are captured by some of the discussions and arguments of economic development. As for example, markets is the answer to everything, export-driven trade and so on. And so I believe there is thousands of alternatives. Tata, right? So what we need for enterprise facilitation, I think, is to enlarge our business concept. I think we need to align our goals, ideals of the social sector into a different model. So one of the things that we need to enlarge is that entrepreneurship does not depend on individual orientation, which is mainly most of the body of literature. And I'm afraid social enterprise has fallen a little bit on that, especially in North America, on the idea of the hero. And I think we need to remove assumptions about locating entrepreneurship in market transactions aimed at profit making. I think that now that discussion has gone a long way. Value creation is larger than profits. There are huge discussions on real wealth. I think social entrepreneurship has contributed and advanced the discussion on this front. Social entrepreneurship is saying, well, this is about, there's a lot of definitions and, of course, things that people don't agree. But one of the things that can bring the people together is the idea that social value creation is fundamental for social entrepreneurship. But still, there are these challenges, as I say, of the individualism, especially in North American concepts of social entrepreneurship. And I think that there is still the cultural captivity, which I have been writing about, this cultural captivity of entrepreneurship, on how we understand enterprise.
1 minute, Anna.
Okay. I think that there is a huge danger in the need, in one of the most popular ways in which is social enterprise, which is about understanding entrepreneurship as a becoming business-like. And I think we see that very much in many of the organizations that we work on, how they are having to travel with that. To me, it's about recognizing the culture, the social and economic diversity. I think we need to bring into all this entrepreneurship development the richness from the different contexts. I think we need to bring the different logics. There are economic different logics. I think we need to bring such as issues like subsistence, or cash economies, the gift economy, and the different economic mechanisms. And I know the different economic mechanisms that many of you are working on, cooperative, barter systems, local currencies, community-based enterprise, fair trade, et cetera, et cetera. And there are very, very important economic inventions coming on, like the Community Interest Corporations in UK, the Office of the Third Sector in UK, the new laws in the United States. Maryland just passed a law on benefit corporations, the stakeholder, where the community are still a stakeholder. So there are many issues, but I'm looking forward to your comments. But I couldn't resist to bring some of these issues on the table. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anna Maria, and for to talk to us about the issue paper on enterprise development. I will let John Anderson and Nancy Nimtam continue and to do their presentation. But a few more people join us, so welcome to everyone. And please do star 6 to mute your line to be able to make sure everyone can listen very easily, John and Nancy. So thank you again, Anna Maria. And by the way, I'm not at my office, so I don't have access to a computer. I could connect on the chat line. There's a chat line where you can write your questions. So I will invite speakers who are connected to look at the question, and when we open, we can take some question from the chat line and take some by phone to the people who are not connected on the Internet. So, John, c'est à ton tour. It's your turn.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and it's a great pleasure to be here today. And I'm going to speak from a very different point of view than Anna Maria, in the sense that we're talking really about a paper that was written for the People-Centered Economy Summit. I hope everybody here will try to make it to that at the end of May, and maybe Nancy can talk a little bit more about that and what's going to happen there. But certainly this paper was written to really engage people in discussion around the kind of areas we're going to be discussing at the summit itself. And one of them is enterprise development, talking about social enterprise, social economy enterprises. I think it's important to note that this is more than ever an important topic. On the one hand, we have in the papers every day almost the failure of traditional investor-owned businesses. So businesses which have operated from purely maximizing profit perspective that are shareholder-owned, have got into terrible difficulties over the last period of time and have caused a lot of pain and suffering to a lot of people. And some of the details around that are still coming out. If you're following the hearings around Goldman Sachs, which are going on now in the United States, you followed what's happened to the auto industry, etc. We've seen really increase in unemployment in Ontario and many provinces in Canada. Unemployment has gone up substantially, in the double digits, and many towns it's approaching between 10 and 20%. Increased poverty. A new report from the Citizens for Public Justice just came out yesterday. In fact, estimating that poverty in Canada would go up by about 900,000 people when the next official statistics were posted. They examined a whole series of indicators. So on the one hand, you have this very, very difficult situation. On the other hand, you have the traditional mechanisms we turn to, such as the state and the governments, whether it's the federal, provincial or municipal level, having less funding, many of them being in deficit, huge deficits. The federal government over $50 billion in deficit, so that the ability for governments to respond as we would have hoped they could have responded in the past to some of these issues is not there in the same manner as it is in other periods of time. So we have these economic difficulties. We're looking out for ways of solving problems, which many of which have become more acute, and many of which are increasing and have always been there. So on the one hand, we have a whole set of demographic issues, whether it's immigrants, many of whom, recent immigrants live in poverty, whether it's Aboriginal citizens, whether it's problems connected to declining economy in rural Canada, which remain unsolved. And at the same time, we have whole new areas, such as environment, renewable energy, local food, where we're looking for new ways of dealing with issues, and where neither the traditional investor-owned businesses nor the state have really responded to those areas in the way that many people would like them to respond. So that's why we think that social enterprises are really an important mechanism to respond to some of these issues. And I guess we know that there's a large demand out there. We have we co-manage a program called the Cooperative Development Initiative, and in last year alone, in a six-month period, we had 300 applications for help in establishing new cooperatives or developing emerging ones. And it just shows you really there is a kind of a pent-up demand out there. And I think it's important to note that in Canada, the social enterprise and the social economy sector is already a very, very large one. While we haven't used those terms as we try to show in the paper, and people may not be familiar with all those terms, if we're looking at the size of the cooperative sector, which is a major part of that, if we're looking at the nonprofit sector, has always been a very large sector in Canada. And it has not always been recognized for its size. And of course, one of the problems being that this sector is probably weakest in Ottawa and in Toronto, where a lot of the media and the policy around these issues is made. And so that many people don't know that in fact. If we look, just take the cooperative sector, there's assets over $275 billion. There are over 17 million memberships. There's around 9,000 cooperatives. We look at the nonprofit social enterprise sector. This is a new and growing one. But as we point out in the paper, Canada has one of the largest charity sectors and charitable sectors in the world, the nonprofit and voluntary sector is the second largest in the world on a per capita basis, and we have a great deal of experimentation where cooperatives and not-for-profit social enterprises are being used for all kinds of different purposes, and we've got all kinds of different models out there. We have published at CCA a pamphlet for anybody who's interested in looking at some of the new models called New Futures, where we give profiles of a large number of these new models of cooperatives engaged in everything from car share to local foods, etc. So I wanted to note that we have, you know, cooperatives are special, and we think that cooperatives have a real role at this time in a situation where of economic difficulty, where we're still in a situation of coming out of an economic crisis very slowly. And cooperatives and social
enterprises
have proved to be far more sustainable than other organizations. For example, Quebec study found that 62% of new cooperatives are still operating after 5 years, compared to 35% for other new businesses. Now, some of the issues, however, that social enterprises, including cooperatives, face are the fact that governments need to better use social enterprises as policy tools for dealing with some of the key issues. Social enterprises need access to capital. Social enterprises need to be used in a broader range of sectors. They need access to existing government programs. They need a more trained staff and directors, because most social enterprises are managed by staff who often come out of the communities, and we need to have more programs at the university and college level which allow people to be trained in how to run cooperatives. And there's a very good one that just started up at York University, the Co-op Management Certificate Program, and there's some others across the country, but they are rare. And you can't find one in every region, you can't find one at every at every university. We also need to make governments really aware of the value of social enterprises. And I guess governments, while some of them are aware, there's a very vast difference between what governments in some provinces at some levels do. On the hand, we have the Quebec government, which has, and Nancy can talk a bit about this, but has a lot of programs dealing with the social economy and cooperatives, a whole range of programs. Whereas if you look at a province like Ontario, they don't even have one full-time person dealing with cooperatives at the present time in terms of the provincial government. And then other provinces, have, such as Nova Scotia, have a fairly good suite of programs dealing with cooperatives and social enterprises. But other large provinces, in fact, the three largest provinces in English Canada, Ontario, BC, and Alberta, have very little in the way of government programs at the provincial level dealing with cooperatives and social enterprises. So what we're proposing in the paper, and I hope that people get a chance to read it, is, and put their comments in, is we think that there has to be, on the one hand, our recommendations are that there's a greater role for social enterprise in the immediate economic revitalization strategies of governments. That often cooperatives have been left out of the solutions to many problems. When a business closes down, here's a chance to perhaps form a cooperative or a social enterprise instead of simply letting the business close down. We need to build partnerships with governments right across the board, so that it's not only in some provinces, but in all provinces we have strong partnerships, and even at the municipal level, where some cities have really embraced the idea of the social economy and social enterprise, whereas most cities have not. And so there's a lot of work to be done there, and we can build on the success stories in cities like Edmonton or now in Montreal.
30 seconds, John?
Hello?
30 seconds just to close your presentation.
Yeah, just finishing off. And so our last recommendation is that we need to build stronger networks and collaboration between social enterprises. And that this means that we have to build collaboration instead of competition. And some of our organizations, the Canadian Cooperative Association, the Chantier d'Economie Sociale, and the Conseil Canadien de la Coopération et Mutualité, and SEDNET have worked together over the years on a number of different issues. And this year, three of these organizations are working together on the People-Centered Economy Summit. But we have to do this all year long and at the various levels, whether it's geographic levels, whether it's at the provincial level or the municipal level, in order to get the social economy, ensure it has a real place in terms of economic development, and that social enterprises and those who want to form new social enterprise have access to the right kind of tools that are available to them. So I'm going to stop there. There's going to be ample time, I think, in the questions to add a few more things.
Thank you very much, John Anderson from CCA. And we'll continue with Nancy Nimtam, the co-author also of this issue paper on enterprise development. It will be presented at the National Summit on the People-Centered Economy. Nancy.
Yeah, can you hear me, Ethel?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm going to just comment briefly on both presentations and try and make a link between the two. I think that your points, Anna Maria, are very well taken, and I think that's the role of researchers to give us this broad perspective and to say that to those of you who know the Chantier, that is very much a concern of ours. And one of the fundamental reasons for the existence of our organization is that we've always said that social economy enterprises and the whole point of their existence must be situated in an overall vision of social transformation and an overall vision of a democratization of our economy, and that in fact, if you look at where social economy enterprises are emerging, it is very much in response to needs in community, but also to aspirations for a new way of doing things and a new way, as opposed to the very monolithic neoliberal vision of economic development that has been imposed upon us, and not just in terms of our daily lives, but also in terms of what is presented to us as the only way to do economic development. So I think that is very important, and that's why, because of this importance of economic democracy, I also agree with Anna Maria's comments around this issue of social enterprise, that I think we're using the term in Canada to refer probably to what we consider to be the basis of the social economy, that is collectively citizen-based action and collectively owned democratic organizations. And the reason why that is important, because if not, we're not really getting out of the charity mode. If we're talking about individually owned enterprises that are doing good because their owners are wanting to do good, that's fine. But there's no element of democracy. So that, from our point of view, is important. I think that's obviously very important for the cooperative movement as well. But once that is said and done, I think that it's a little bit of a chicken and egg kind of a situation, because of this overall context where there's only one way that is recognized as the real economy, etc., that we have to be able to build from the base a movement that is going to be able to bring those values and bring this social transformation, and that is going to come as we build more and more enterprises and control more and more pieces of our economy that are working in another logic than the logic of for-profit, all to the market economy. And that has really been the sense of the work, and that is the sense of this summit, is to bring together people coming from the cooperative movement, from the nonprofit sector, from different regions, from different social movements, because we'll have representatives from the union movement and so on, to show that, in fact, across the country, and I just got back at 12:30 last night from Mexico, where I was at the Mexican Social Forum, where the solidarity economy, and there were people from all over Latin America. It's a huge movement that is growing from the base across the world, where the critical mass to begin to show that it's not only desirable, it's not only because we have good values, but also because we have a we're capable of doing it. We can invest, and as you know, John showed, our enterprises last longer. Our enterprises respond better. Our enterprises went through the crisis in a better way. So I think that what we're trying to look at at this summit is to show the strength and the adhesion to this kind of vision, to show that we are doing this bit by bit by building these enterprises, that historically we have done it, and by coming together under a common banner, that we are much stronger than we thought, and that to continue, that all we're asking for is government, you know, governments are elected by the people and they're using the people's money, and that they should be investing much more in this kind of people-centered economy and social economy enterprises, because it makes sense and it responds to the needs of our communities and it responds to the needs of the people, and that what we want when we talk about the recommendations in this paper is a level playing field. Look, you know, there's always this myth somehow that, you know, because we have a social purpose or an environmental purpose, and somehow that it's going to cost more money, whereas General Motors and all these others, well, they do things, you know, and they just create wealth, and we're just taking away the wealth. Not true. I mean, this last crisis has certainly shown it. But we have to be able to come together, and as John said, to those networks that show that is a possibility. And I think what's also very important in doing that is to show that we are not just an economy for the poor. We are not just an economy or enterprises that take up pieces that the private sector doesn't want, because often that is seen. And I'll end with an example, because I have to be brief. It's very recently, you know, over the past 10 to 15 years, or since 1997, actually, the environmental movement has worked with, you know, environmental militants. So we sort of said, well, you know, the whole environmental sector, you know, we push government to put regulations, and it's created what they call the environmental industry. Particularly at that time, it was in recycling and, you know, and so on. And so, but it was not a very profitable sector. So, but we said we've got to take this on. So we create this network of social economy enterprises in the recycling business. Started to build up, and municipalities, because they had to deal with this issue of recycling and so on, were more and more, and even a majority of them were saying, we want to do business with social economy enterprises because it keeps, it, you know, they're transparent, we're not being taken for a ride, it creates employment in our community, the profits are invested into, you know, continuing to improve the environment and so on. This makes sense to us. And about a year ago, the private sector woke up and intervened politically from government saying, wait a minute, we got to stop this. These guys are taking away our market. Because it has become profitable, it became their market. That's and it right. was because we were rooted in the communities, because we had support of the municipalities, because we were networked, that 10 days ago, the government sent out a directive and now said, okay, well, because they had sent a directive down to municipalities saying, you can't do direct deals with social economy enterprises. This is unfair competition. They just reversed their position because the municipalities, because the movement was networked, and because we said, no way, this is the way we move forward, and it makes sense. So this is just an example of why we're putting those recommendations forward, to say that we have to build a critical mass. We can do it, but we've got to network, and we've got to show government this makes sense. And if they're investing that much money in General Motors, just think what we could do with it if we had it on our side. So I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Thank you, Nancy, John, and Anna Maria. And Nancy, you connect the dots between all the different presentations. I'm just saying right now there's a few people probably you should still have to do *6 to mute your line. But thank you, everyone, for your presentation. I will also ask the speakers and Rachel from CNET, if you go on the chat line to look at two or three questions we can brought back, because with technical difficulties where I am, I can't have access to the chat line. People, you can post your question on the chat line. People who are not connected on the internet, in a few seconds, you can unmute your line, *6, name yourself, name where you are in Canada, involved in social enterprise, very brief, and a brief question. And right away, mute your line again, *6, and the speakers could answer. And the chat room stay open, so we can take either question raised by the speaker when they read it on the chat room or online. And after that, I will wrap up with, because the session is recorded and a few other sessions are coming, so I'll give you information. So does anyone wants to raise a question to any of our incredible speakers? It was a very interesting panel, a clear presentation, very focused. We have two documents online. People could also comment online on the wiki to make sure we can improve those papers and have something to propose as a policy and continue to enhance the sector, the enterprise development sector and the social enterprise sector. Any question?
Yes, I'm Khan Rahi from Toronto. I'm active within the immigrant refugee sector. Actually, this question is to all speakers. Specifically, what advice do you have for us working within this very specific sector of immigrant refugees to advocate, push, develop, or bring people together to come up with viable and sustainable policies in this area? In other words, is your advice that we should perhaps go sector-specific in terms of developing social enterprises, or basically direct our energy as to what's happening in the private sector, what they do, and what we could do better?
Thank you very much. Nancy?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I think that it's not a question of looking at what the private sector and what we can do better. I think one of the key successes for us has been the bottom-up way of building this thing and working out of communities to identify needs community and potential community by community and supporting the development of these enterprises. So, for example, you know, I have a certain hesitancy about saying, well, we're going to develop the social economy, for example, for exclusively or specifically for immigrant populations. What is important is to develop a social economy in a territory, in the city, and so on, but to make sure that immigrants and new arrivals know that this is an option for them and this is a possibility. For example, we've started this work because we're behind on that as well in Quebec, and we now have a working group with people from the ministry and from the city of Montreal and from different groups, community groups, working with the new arrivals and with immigrants. And the Quebec government is actually even committed so that when they do integration of new immigrants, they talk to them about, you know, their rights and, you know, how the socioeconomics of Quebec, that they include the existence of social economy, because some people come from countries where cooperatives have been an important part of their lives, and it's something that but they don't hear about them when they arrive. They just hear about, you know, the big, you know, whatever. So I think that the issue is making alliances at a local level. Of course, you know, so, and that's why it's very important. And this, when we talk about a people-centered economy, it's very hard to separate out community economic development approaches from the development of the social economy enterprises. You know, the issue of territory is a very fundamental piece of the puzzle. And if we look at the successes that are taking place right now across Canada, that's true in Quebec, but look in Edmonton, where the city has gotten involved in investment and so on. So I think the main thing is really trying to create the tools and making sure that immigrants and refugees know that this is an option, that we get out to them and we make it easier for them to be able to use those options in integrating into their new society.
Thank you, Nancy. John?
Yes, well, I just wanted to add to that. I mean, I completely concur with what Nancy said, but I wanted to add that, first of all, SEDNET does have a small program to help immigrant social enterprises. And they just had a call for proposals and awarded some very recently. So that's something you might want to check into. Also, our Cooperative Development Initiative has funded a large number of proposals from immigrant communities around cooperatives. So there are those opportunities there, which may be specific. And I think we do need more programs which are designed not as necessarily as you know, directly looking at immigrants, but certainly they should be designed to looking at some of the issues in our inner cities and where most immigrants are recent immigrants are concentrated, and I think that's something where we need much more programs which are going to help immigrants get started in building their own social enterprises.
Ana Maria.
Just to add to the mix, I would say again diversity. I think that as Nancy said, there are many immigrants that come here and never hear about co-ops and have a lot of experience in co-ops. However, having said that, I also say said we need to be careful and, again, embrace diversity. We hear a lot of in different co-ops where the diversity is not being embraced. And there's different ways in which people bring their own experience of working in co-ops or community-based enterprises or any form of collective enterprises that need to be hear and listen and at the level of the group. We see a lot of problems there. And actually, hopefully, we will do some research on that area. So that's my major comment. Yes,
thank you very much. We still have 12 minutes for more questions, either from the chat or on the line. Is there anyone else for another question? Name yourself and be brief.
There was one question. There's one question there which somebody noted in the chat room.
Yes.
Asked about the recent agreement between the Mondragon Cooperatives and the United Steelworkers, and how important that was. And I'd like to just address that briefly. There's some responses as well on the chat line. But I think it's important to note that we will actually, at the People-Centered Economy Summit, we will be having a speaker who will be the North American representative of Mondragon, as well as somebody from the United Steelworkers, speaking at that conference on those issues. And so for an up-to-date airing of what's happening around that issue, I think that would be a good thing to participate in our conference. And certainly we will be publishing online the results, both in written and in a sound form. So I think that is a very important initiative, and certainly looks at how cooperatives and social enterprises can break into the manufacturing sector, which is probably in Canada one of the areas where social enterprises are weakest. And while there are some cooperatives and some important ones, with the Federated Cooperatives in Western Canada owns a big oil refinery, and there are renewable energy cooperatives and social enterprises, but really this is in terms of being able to begin to take control of manufacturing on a community level, partnering with Mondragon, which is the seventh largest company. It's a worker-owned cooperative in Spain, but it's the seventh largest company in Spain. This is, I think, really an exciting development.
Thank you, John. Any other questions on the line? You just have to unmute your line, star
Hello.
Six. Oh. Yes, can you name yourself?
Sure, Debbie Hagman, and I work with Alberta Culture and Community Spirit in Alberta. We have a department called Community Development, and I'm a Community Development Officer. I've been very interested in social enterprise because I worked in economic development many years ago and work mostly in rural communities. I'm very involved in and supportive of the community cooperatives. And we have a great community cooperatives association here in Alberta as well, and I'm familiar with FedNet. My question is just that I'm looking for models because I work with charities and nonprofits, and this is the question they're asking about, is how can we use social enterprise better? And I don't see a lot of models out there for establishment of social enterprises. I've been following along with a lot of different organizations, but I'm just wondering, is there some work going to be done in that particular area other than, you know, what's already currently being done?
Okay, thank you. Any speaker wants to answer this one?
Yeah, Etta?
Wait, Nancy, go for it.
Okay, I thought I'd been. I think the first thing is often, you know, and if we look at the experience in Quebec, there are a lot of organizations that call themselves community organizations and don't see themselves as enterprises. But in fact, they are enterprises. I'll give you an example. Community radios. You know, we talk about, you know, the media and the concentration and the media and so on, and it's to such an extent that the issue of access to information has become a very fundamental question, even, you know, in our communities, particularly in rural communities. But the fact of the matter is there are community radios, you know, and I don't know about the rest. I know there are in the rest of Canada, but certainly in communities just across Quebec, their funding, like 90 to 95% is self-financing or with volunteers and so on, and they get, I think, $10,000 a year. These are enterprises. These are enterprises in the media, and once they made that, they start to look at themselves differently. Then they change all their strategy, and they continue to develop in a really interesting way. So I think one of the dangers of the social enterprise discourse sometimes that really worries me is that this idea that charities that are doing things that have to be done in the non-market economy and that cannot, that need government support or donations or whatever, because that's the reality of, you know, are being asked to create social enterprises in the marketplace to make money to, you know, to be able to finance their charitable activities. So it depends what we're talking about in terms of models. If we're looking at that model, there aren't many things out there because it won't work, it can't work, and it shouldn't work like that. It should work differently, is to democratizing our economy so that we are redistributing wealth in the very process of creating it. Once that's said and done, I think that, once again, there's different models depending on what the sectors are, and that's what we have to look at. You know, in some sectors, and that's true for government, you know, private sector companies that pave roads, let me tell you, they don't self-finance. It's 100% government funding, but they can make profits, they can pay decent wages to their workers, and everybody thinks that's normal. So, you know, so it's a question of how we define ourselves within the economy as well and in our relationship to the economy.
I just wanted to add to that.
Yes, Anna Maria and John, in a few seconds, I just want to add then on the different hubs, social economy hub, there's some mapping and also some case study on social enterprise of different size in different sectors of activity. Don't hesitate to visit the site. Anna Maria, and after that, John.
Yeah, I always one of the things that we feel when we work in this field is that we are the invisibles. You know, all the things that are happening, as John was saying, all the work of the co-ops, all the work of the community-based enterprise and collectives and community development organizations is like invisible. And now it seems like we have become a little bit visible under the term social enterprises. So the term social enterprise is a new label, basically, is what I was saying early on. And it's a good label that brings good things and some concerns, too. And I think it depends what you are looking for. I think there are lots of different models. You can see, for example, Jack Warder's book, just the latest, what is called, Understanding the Social Economy, A Canadian Perspective, and he actually talks about different models there. But all depends how you see it. I think there is tremendous pressure on organizations to be like business-like, to be considered social enterprises. So that's a big problem. I really like the point of Nancy saying, you know, we one of the dangers of social enterprise is that it's putting us in a box, and we need to bring here the overall goals of things of social justice and other aspects of, and that way, for example, I see Guatemala and indigenous people doing work in fair trade, and they always are doing all the kind of work in their own communities. But until they start getting in the fair trade, then they start discovering, oh, we are a social enterprise. And actually, what is interesting in this case of Guatemala, with my Guatemala friends, is that they are using social enterprise not as prescriptive and normative way of you have to behave like business, have the commercial aspects, but they are looking at bigger picture. They are looking at really having a voice in a country that has been killing them and protecting themselves and keep their ethnicity and so on and so forth.
Thank you, Ana Maria. John?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, and it's something which is going to come pretty soon, is that there is really a movement worldwide around use of social enterprises in terms of delivering public policy. And it's interesting in terms of, for those of you who are following the elections in the UK, that all three of the major parties, and it looks like it's split in terms of those three parties, it's not clear that one will have a majority of the votes anyway, have proposed different initiatives in terms of using cooperatives more in terms of delivering social policy. So it looks like whoever wins that election, that cooperatives will be used much more in terms of actually delivering a lot of public policy, particularly around health and education. So this is something I think which we'll stay tuned to, and we're not sure of how it's all going to go, and we don't have a particular opinion in terms of all of the different proposals, but I think that what it shows is there's a pent-up demand out there to say that traditional delivery of public policy through traditional mechanisms has not worked, and we need to have some more kind of community-controlled mechanisms, and cooperatives are one of them.
Thank you. John, I will ask if there is any other question online, but if you can check at the chat room at the same time. Is there anyone online who wants to unmute their line and ask another question?
Yes, it is. This is Emmanuel Lapierre-Fortin.
Okay.
This is Emmanuel Lapierre-Fortin at the University of Guelph. And my question is on Nancy's point around, you know, like building a critical mass and getting everyone together at the summit. So I'm wondering really, like, who is actually missing? Like, who is it that we're not reaching out to and that we should, like, in the longer run, like, be reaching out to in terms of getting them into the whole movement?
Any speaker wants to answer who we should reach? Nancy?
Yeah, okay. I can never remember if I'm muted or not. I think that, you know, as John said earlier, this is the first time that different networks across Canada have actually come together to organize an event. So I'm really encouraged, and I think it's an important, you know, not a beginning because we've all been working for a long time together, but it's a qualitative step forward. And I think what's interesting about this initiative, as John mentioned, is that we're also bringing in people from municipal governments and from the trade unions and you know, people with environmental concerns. This whole idea that if we're critical of the way our economy is working and our world is going, we have to be able to propose and build alternatives. You know, I refer back to the World Social Forum, where it started off by saying a world is possible, and now it's another world is in the process of being built. And there's actually somebody who was very interesting, who's not in the social economy movement at all, a commentator who said, you know, it's sort of like, you know, are we going to overthrow capitalism? No, but, you know, monarchy still exists, but that's not the dominant system. The dominant system is representative democracy, and so we have some, you know, old, you know, we still have kings and queens, but they don't, doesn't signify, you know, so there's we have to see this as an emerging thing, and we have to be building. So hopefully, you know, the summit will be a step forward. And then we have to sit down and have those debates. And I think, you know, the point that John made, for example, it's very important, and one of the keys for our success in Quebec has been our alliance with the trade union movement. It means that we have to have debates with the public sector about what John was just saying, you know, because is it true that the government is going to solve every single, you know, social problem in the world? No. But we still need to defend our, you know, public health services and so on, but maybe there can be reorganizations. We have to talk to people from the union movement and from social movements about those kinds of things. Community organizations that feel that are sometimes scared of the social solidarity economy because they think we're going to try and force, you know, helping homeless, we're going to start charging homeless $10 a day to come into the shelters. That's not what we're talking about either. And obviously the private sector, well, they get worried, well, that's a good sign. That means we're making progress. Mm-hmm. So all this to say that I think that we're building, and this is a movement that has to grow from the ground up, and so every step forward, and we're missing, a lot of people, but I think we're making a big step forward, and this is why the summit is so important.
Thank you. John, did you find another question on the chat room?
Yes, well,
briefly.
Certainly somebody had asked about the environment and how social enterprises, and I guess that to me, I mean, Nancy answered that and gave a very concrete example, but I would have to say from the co-op standpoint that some of the co-ops in Canada are leaders around how dealing with the environment, not just in terms of being good co-ops, but they're important leaders. In the whole of the business community. So you take Mountain Equipment Co-op or Van City, which is the largest credit union in Canada in Vancouver. They're both really important leaders in terms of environmental practices and cooperators insurance, another one. And we've actually got a series of case studies on our website, which we can take a look at for more information on that. But I think the reason why they are is, and it goes back to this point that Nancy's been talking about, is really the question of that co-ops are democratic organizations. And so co-ops allow their membership to participate in defining what the policy of those organizations are. And I mean, I think an interesting thing, in this is very, very different. I mean, Mountain Equipment has, I think, 14 or 15,000 people vote for the board. Well, this is not a huge number in terms of their total membership, about 3 million, but it's a hell of a lot more people than are voting for the board of the Royal Bank, for example. And so I think that there's a real openness in co-ops because they are democratic organizations. And when you said, to answer that last question as well, I mean, how do we get more people in there? We have to get the people who are co-op members to participate more in their co-ops or in their social enterprises and really participate in electing your board, participating in determining what is the policy of that organization. I think that's really, really crucial.
Thank you, John. We are very close. We have 1 minute left, and I want to thank all the speakers, Nancy, John, and Ana Maria. I think you gave a good sense and a taste about enterprise development, also mobilizing people to come to the National Summit at the end of May. Please, people, participants, thank you for your participation, but go visit the National Summit Wiki and contribute to the original draft of the summit issue paper that will help every one of us who works on policy. Also, we will have two upcoming sessions, tele-learning session, on one other last issue paper and one in French who will address the sixth topic, but in May 12, we do have the partnership and movement building at 9 a.m. PST, and a French session on all six topics, May 11, 9 a.m. PST. And the session has been recorded, so if you know a lot of people who could be interested by this topic, they will be able to go on SEDNET website. It will be an MP3 file, and it will be posted very soon, and you'll be able to listen to it again or share it with others. So thank you very much to Rachel, who organized everything. Thank you, the speakers. Thank you, all participants. My name is Del Cote. It was a pleasure to be with you. And see you at the summit. Bye-bye.